Gareth Jones on Speed News Charge. It was announced this week that three times W Series champion Jamie Chadwick and Ferrari driver Lilu Wado will compete November's all-female Formula E pre-season test in Valencia. Some people are describing this as the most exciting thing that's happened in the all-electric series since its beginning. Others are describing it as the only exciting thing that has happened in the all-electric series since its beginning. Hello and welcome to the fortnightly struggle that is Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, he's Zog.
Hello.
I'm Zog. Oh man, as you understand, right, I've just spent, 45 minutes trying to get...
I don't even want to know what audio issues you had there, but I can hear you now, I can see you now, we're in good shape.
Hey, good. Quick, let's, as the Italians might say, as Ferrari might say, carpe diem, seize the day, although that's Latin rather than Italian, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Forza Ferrari for winning so gloriously in Mexico this weekend.
Fantastic. Sainz is really going out with a bang, isn't he? This is the first year that he's won more than one race.
Yeah.
Is it the fourth race that he's won, in fact? He hasn't won that many, but...
I think it is his fourth. I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, but he's showing Ferrari what they're missing, or what they're going to miss next year. Great to see him win, and great to have it underlined that we've got three competitive teams at the front of the field. This is likely to continue to next year because the rules aren't changing much. So we're going to have a lot of continuity. So we can expect to see Red Bull, Ferrari, McLaren, you know, being pretty competitive with one another. This bodes very well for next year. And also, I realise that I'm going to be a Ferrari fan next year. That combination of Leclerc, Hamilton and Fred Vasseur at Ferrari, I think that's a super, super strong combo. And I can't wait to see what they're going to dish up.
Z, I don't know if you've noticed, but on the shoulders of the Ferrari team regalia, let's call it that, they have a sponsor that is called, I think, Z06.
Isn't it ZCG?
Is it ZCG?
I think it's ZCG, yeah. But had I noticed that you just need to get a little white paint pen and fill in the rest of the C? Yeah, I had noticed that.
Every time I see these shirts, I think it must be the creases in the shoulders. Does that say Zog?
I know. I'm going to have to get some of that team wear, and they just add a little bit of, and they just do a little bit of doctoring, a little bit of customising.
Yeah, and it made me think exactly what you just said. Oh, I bet Zog will be Tifosi next year. You know, I've put my flag on the prancing horse. You know, I've said that. Primarily, I should be Tifosi, of course.
Well, I mean, you know, anybody who's a if you're a motorsport fan, you're kind of a Ferrari fan, you know.
Of course
you love Ferrari. But Ferrari hasn't been the team in F1 for quite a while that I've been rooting for first and foremost. I've been, you know, rooting for Ferrari drivers along the way. But next year, I think I'm joining the Tifosi.
I can see the smile in your face. I'm guessing that there's only one person with a smile broader than Fred Vasseur or you right now, and that's Lewis Hamilton. He's thinking, oh God, I'm going to parachute into a team that's operating pretty efficiently. Man, things are going to be all right there, because, you know, he'll be full of doubt, won't he?
Yeah, and, you know, when you make the kind of decision that he made to jump teams, you tend to do it at a time when you know you don't know what that team's going to be like next year. There's going to be considerable uncertainty about how strong their package is going to be compared to everyone else. But you know, it looks like he's made probably as much by luck as by good judgment, but he's made a really great decision there. I really think it's going to be terrific to see what the old wise head and hands of Hamilton can do alongside super talented young guy Leclerc. I think it's going to be terrific. I really, I can't wait.
Yeah, me too. They're kind of the ultimate boy band team, I think, at the moment. Ferrari, I think Leclerc and Sainz, the way they conduct themselves, and they're gorgeous looking, you know. Lewis adding to that is creating kind of a love triangle, in a way.
Well,
you know.
Oh, and speaking of which, because there is this Oliver Bearman, Colapinto, and an ex-girlfriend love triangle going on at the moment. You're familiar with this?
As I understand it, I mean, I don't follow the whole Wags thing in F1, but
no,
I will now.
I,
because it's fascinating. If I've got this right, Ollie Bearman, who is the Ferrari spare driver, he split from his girlfriend, whose name is Estelle Ogilvy, who I had to look up, and she is now dating Franco Colapinto.
Yes, that is exactly the story. So
now we have a conversation about Colapinto, but we've got to pause for the moment. I had to look up who these people are. Estelle Ogilvy, well, she's about as pretty as a Lancia Stratos, isn't she? Gosh.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, seems like a very, very lovely young woman, lawyer or law student. And yeah, I just wonder whether this will add any extra grit to the Colapinto-Bearman rivalry on track when...
Well, of course,
you know, Bearman doesn't have an F1 seat at the moment, but he's certainly one of those guys that's in the frame in the future. Yeah, who knows? Will that add a bit of a bit of extra tension, a bit of extra motivation to their racing? Who knows? But I did some research and I turned up the fact that 85% of all previous F1 love triangles involved James Hunt. That's, that is a fact. That's a fact.
Why am I not surprised? How wonderful. And I did look it up. I've been digging a little bit into love triangles. There's another one on the grid at the moment as well, isn't there? Max Verstappen is in a relationship with Kelly Piquet, of course. Daughter of Nelson Piquet.
Yes.
Senior, right?
Oh, yeah. She used to go out with Kvyat, Danny Kvyat.
Correct. Correct. They have a daughter together, I believe, Kvyat and Piquet.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, I mean, I guess this sort of thing is going to happen because these are the circles that these people move in, right?
Of course. Meet people, of course, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
They're probably moving in relatively small social circles, going to a lot of the same parties, hanging out with a lot of the same people. And so, yeah, that it's what happens in any social circle, you know, people split up and get together and that's what happens.
Yeah, wasn't that a Moby song? People
maybe.
We're all stardust.
Late period. Yeah, I was going to say, yes, it was a later album, wasn't it? Yeah. Well,
sorry,
done.
I went off that. The one that always stands out for me, though, that I remember from way back, was Corinna Schumacher, who was Heinz Harald Frentzen's girlfriend when Schumacher and Heinz were partners in the Silver Arrows Sauber Mercedes Le Mans team, the young Silver Arrows, I think.
Yes, that's right, yes. So
Corinna was with Heinz Harald Frentzen, and then when, as I understand the story, when Michael got a drive in Jordan at Formula One, she jumped ship and went with Michael Schumacher, and in their defence stayed together and are still together today. So that was the right choice, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely looked like it. Yeah, 100%. But to get back to Colapinto, how well is he working out? That really looks like an inspired choice by Williams to put him in. It's pretty unusual to yank a driver out, you know, and swap him over halfway through the season. But but no, that was clearly the right decision. He's doing a spectacular job.
It is almost beyond belief how well he's doing. I like to think that I keep a good eye on the up-and-coming drivers in other categories who deserve a slot in Formula One. Ollie Bearman and Liam Lawson, these are all people I spotted years ago in F2 and F3 who were remarkable, and you think, yeah, those are the ones who are going to get through. I never saw Franco Colapinto coming at all. He's come in through an unusual door. He was a touring car driver in South America, as I understand it, in Argentina,
But beyond that, I never caught sight of him whatsoever. And suddenly, he's dropped into a seat and he is about as prepared as any driver you could imagine.
Yeah, I think he did a little bit of endurance racing and, yeah, done a decent bit of karting.
He was in F2 this year.
I was going to say, yeah, he was in F2, wasn't he? I think it was when he tested for Williams first time out, they were blown away by how quick he was, how competitive he was with Albon's times. And, yeah, Albon's no slouch. And when he's stepped into the car and, you know, in qualifying and in the races, he's really been very strong straight off the bat. He hasn't taken much time to get up to speed. You know, he's delivering already.
Well, I think you touched on a nerve there when you said, oh, Albon's no slouch. He's actually pushing Albon so hard that Albon is, I think, making more mistakes at the moment. Or is Albon not quite as good as we all perceive him to be?
He's very good. He's not one of the drivers who you'd say is in that very top tier, but he's B-list rather than A-list, I think.
Mm.
I don't think that's unfair.
He does have a killer instinct. He's a bit elbows out Albon, a bit Magnussen. I like that about him. He gives no quarter.
He also races with skill and he's made, you know, he hasn't, I mean, a couple of years ago he seemed to be making more little mistakes. He's much more consistent now and much less likely to put a foot wrong. You can trust him to, you know, bring the car home most of the time. I'm an Albon fan, but yeah, Colapinto is really going to give him a run for his money and they're going to be quite closely matched, I think. Well, closely matched for the rest of the season. Of course, after this season, we don't know what's going to happen to him because he doesn't have a drive for next year.
Yeah, at the moment, there isn't without a lot of negotiation, an available seat for him.
Isn't there a seat open at Sauber still?
Haven't confirmed who's going to be alongside Hulk.
Exactly.
Bottas is a likely candidate. I'm not sure how Williams would happy to loan Colapinto out and risk losing him. I think they want to keep him as a banker, as a possible replacement for Albon once Catalyst Science is settled in a year or two. They want to keep him hot, and the best way to do that is to keep him as their test and reserve driver, I would suggest.
Although, if you lend him to a team like Sauber, who are not going to be competitive with Williams next year,
it's
you're able to
place.
Get him. Yeah, you know, he's not a threat to you points wise, but he's getting experience of racing in the same field and on the tracks, you know, that he's going to be racing when he comes back to Williams. So that would seem like a really good place to put him if you could get him in the Sauber.
If they can negotiate, if what everybody wants, you know, oh, I need to get out
of course,
here,
yeah.
Or I need to do that. Yeah, there'll be all sorts of conditions. So it's down to the lawyers. I was in my favourite pub, the Albion, here in Conwy, a couple of weeks ago. And this guy came to the bar and said, which is the cheapest beer you've got here? This one, the woman on the bar, pointed to him. And I turned to this guy and said, look, not only is it the cheapest beer, it's actually the best one. Listen, I'll buy it for you. Have it, you know. I was extending a welcome.
Very good.
And I guess this guy was South American. And he was Argentinian from Buenos Aires, you know. But Buenos Aires. Oh, that's right. Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires. And I got talking to him about the very strong connections, as you're aware, between Wales and Patagonia, which is in Argentina.
The only Welsh-speaking region of the world outside Wales.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. It's North Malian Welsh as well. It's us. It's our people, what they say. Anyway, so we got chatting, and after a while, we worked out we had so many things in common. He was a charming, wonderful man. His name was Manuel. And I said to him, do you know, one of my heroes, when you think about it, is an Argentinian, Juan Manuel Fangio.
Hmm.
And he looked at me and said, yes, but now we've got Colapinto.
Wow!
He's a national hero already in Argentina. He's headline news and deserves to be.
Yeah, he should be. Yeah, no, he's absolutely, you know, he's made a terrific first impression. But let's hope we get to see a lot more of him, because it would be great if he was able to get a seat for next year. But as you say, it would require some deals to be worked out.
Yeah.
Surely Williams is going to be motivated to keep him on the back burner. You know, just have him simmering on the back burner there until they want to, you know, serve him up hot.
And he is hot, baby. He's good-looking hot as well, isn't he, gorgeous?
He is. No, yeah, he is. Aww. No, he's a very good actor and comes across very well on camera. Seems like a very nice chap. Let's just hope they can figure something out for next year. I suppose the other place he might just end up would be maybe RB if Lawson was promoted to Red Bull. And Lawson was looking pretty good in Mexico.
Amazing. He has some very special set of skills. I'm obliged to say that every time.
I detected a little friction between him and Perez. Lawson giving them the finger during that overtaking move. That's a bit... and they're in the same camp too, you know.
Yeah, really.
RB and Red Bull. That's a little bit... not everything is rosy there, apparently.
Let's talk for a few minutes about some of the argy-bargy. Oh, I can't call it that. Sorry, that was completely... I didn't mean it that way. I wasn't referring to Colapinto. I'm talking about the friction generated by a clash between how the rules are playing out in Formula One regarding overtaking and some of the techniques employed by some of the drivers to make the most out of those rules at the moment and how it's ebbing and flowing. I'm talking about Max. Max getting a 20-second penalty for gaining advantage, overtaking off the circuit, and, as we all know it, ultimately pushing anyone who wants to overtake him on the outside off the circuit himself, and that being acceptable. Now, the whole reason this is happening is we don't have gravel traps anymore. And we don't have gravel traps anymore because tarmac is much better at slowing cars down than gravel is. And it stops spreading stuff onto the circuit, which creates further problems. This is why we have these concrete runoff areas now. They're higher grip. As long as it is possible to get spun off the circuit and rejoin the race, we're going to have these sort of problems. There has to be a penalty for going off the circuit in terms of, what do? Do we have variable stickiness out there or something? What do we do? You know,
this is the classic problem of sort of making rules such that you can, you know, encourage good, close, exciting racing, you know, but disincentivize dirty racing, and I think Max, he's an aggressive driver who I think definitely goes over the line in terms of what should be acceptable in terms of, you know, fair wheel-to-wheel racing. But he's also, quite interestingly, been very good at, as people are realising, he's been very good at kind of exploiting the rules as they are written, such that, for example, in Austin, the move when Lando was trying to overtake him, Mac knew that as long as he was ahead at the apex, he could, you know, run wider and, you know, let the brake off a little bit more, running Lando wider and pushing him off. As long as Max was ahead at the apex, it didn't matter whether he would have made the corner or not, whatever else happens, Lando's going to get the penalty there.
Yeah.
So he's been quite good at using the rules, arguably as any driver should be, you know.
Yeah, it's part of the game, isn't it?
Yeah.
We prefer the more gentlemanly approach, being British, don't we?
Well, I don't have this question of being, you know, being British or not, but I certainly think, you know, nobody ever accused Jim Clark, for example, of, you know, I think being an overly aggressive driver, of pushing him off, of getting his elbows out too much. You know, he clearly one of the greatest drivers of all time, and he achieved all his success. He beat everybody by being the most skillful driver on the track that day. You know, he didn't...
Gentleman Jim.
It's not a Schumacher or Verstappen style, we're both going to this corner, but only one of us is coming out if you're going to fight me for it, kind of attitude. I don't think that's how you should race.
Correct.
There's also this issue, though, that you don't want to have too many rules and regulations in your racing, such that, you know, at every race, you time and time again have to figure out whether this driver and this driver and this driver are going to get penalties because of what they've done that's sort of just on the edge of normal racing. You know, you need to have workable, sensible rules.
I recall when IndyCar ran at COTA maybe 2 years ago, they decided, because policing track limits was so complex, that they would just abandon it and it was a free-for-all. But they ruled that there was very little advantage in going off track because it was dusty at the time when they were racing there. They were significantly slower than F1, of course. They're not as agile.
And that would very much be circuit-specific, surely, because, of course, yeah, there are plenty of circuits where cutting the corner clearly gives you a huge advantage. To get back to the reason why we've got so many more of these concrete runoff areas, tarmac runoff areas, rather than gravel, some of the time it's because MotoGP also runs on that circuit.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and they want tarmac runoff rather than gravel. So there could clearly be a problem there that, you know, you've got to have solutions at every circuit, well, that suit all of the racing they have going on. They're not just, you know, the one series that we care about the most.
Very difficult thing to achieve, isn't it?
It is, it is. I think F1 does mostly have its rules sorted out. I don't think there's anything, you know, terribly at fault here. But they do, I think, need to figure out something. They need to do some sort of tweak, and exactly where that is, I'm not sure, but they need to do some sort of tweak to discourage the kind of trick that Verstappen likes pulling off at the moment. And it sounds, from what I read post-Mexico, that 19 out of 20 drivers are in agreement about that.
I wonder who the 20th is.
Oh, I no idea.
Okay, guys, settle down. Thank you. Let's get this meeting underway. I'm Alexander Woods, and the purpose of this extraordinary meeting is to take a vote on the ruling that forcing people off track to gain a pass is unacceptable in the view of the Grand Prix Drivers Association. So, let's hear your votes. Alex Albon first.
Yeah.
Carlos Sainz.
But of course.
Charles Leclerc?
Naturally, yes.
Daniel Ricciardo? Oh, sorry, there is no Daniel Ricciardo. Liam Lawson?
Yeah, mate.
Esteban Ocon?
Oui, yes.
Fernando Alonso?
Very unacceptable, yes.
There is no Logan Sargeant. Franco Colapinto?
Absolutely.
George Russell?
Clearly, yes.
Kevin Magnussen? Yeah, I suppose. Lance Stroll?
Yeah.
Was that a yes or a no?
Yeah.
I'll put that down as a yes. Lando Norris.
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, boy. Totally yes.
Nico Hülkenberg.
Yeah.
Oscar Piastri.
Oh, yeah, mate.
Pierre Gasly.
Naturally, yes.
Sergio Perez.
Yes.
Valtteri Bottas.
Oh, yeah.
Yuki Tsunoda.
Oh, yeah. Fucking definitely.
Zhou Guan Yu.
Aye, happen as like.
And finally, Max Verstappen.
I would prefer if you asked this question outside the room.
You're a Jones on speed!
Via the gift of technology, joining me and Zog for more chat about cars is the lovely Alex Goy. Hello, Alex.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I've had a week. I've had an October, which has been fun. Much fun.
2 weeks ago to the day when we spoke, you just had an MG Cyberster. Delivered.
Stupid name.
It's a rotten name. Who says cyber anything anymore? Zog, do you say cyber anything?
No, I can't think of the last time I talked about any cyber anything. Cyborg came up in conversation the other day.
Cybermen?
Cybermen are allowed because they've been around since the 60s.
Yeah, they predate this. Yeah, should a Cyberman be driving an MG Cyberster then? That would be a great image, wouldn't it? I want to get AI to generate that.
Even before I got into it, it's kind of in a class of one because there isn't another EV two-seat convertible sports car thing, right?
That
just doesn't exist. Like the Tesla Roadster was the last one that did, but that went out of production ages ago, and it was, you know, old tech, quite flawed, and it was a Lotus Elise. And I love a Lotus Elise, But yeah, the Cyberster, I've seen it now kind of knocking around for years. The look of the thing, I always thought it was a bit awkward, bit odd to look at. The front and the rear don't quite align. I didn't like the way there's a bit of piano black where the top of the car, to kind of hide the visual weight, that it's actually quite tall. So when you put the roof down or up, it kind of makes it look a bit more complete with the roof up. I didn't really like that until I got properly up close and personal with it. I maintain it's an odd looking thing. It's striking. I love the fact that its doors go up, and even better than that, you can open them on the key.
Yes.
So you press the side of the door you want on the key, and then as you walk up to the car, it opens for you. It's a bit of visual theatre.
And there are two versions. There's a four-wheel drive version and a two-wheel drive motion. Oh, there's a bi-motor version.
Yes, there's the Trophy and the GT. So the Trophy is a rear drive, 340 horsepower, 0-62 in 5 seconds job. I had the GT, which is the all-wheel drive one, 503 horsepower, 535 pound-foot, 0-62 in 3.2 seconds, which is a little bit silly.
That's amazing, isn't it? Because it's got four-wheel drive, it can do that. It can get the power down, right?
Yeah.
Would that make it the quickest accelerating MG yet? It might do.
Bound to be, Unless you count... what was the MGSVR, the thing that used to be the Qual Mangusta that had a Mustang engine?
Let me have a look at the internet real quick. MGSV.
I doubt that would have been as quick as 3.2.
Oh, was it called that?
So the MGSV...
I think it was,
you say that, so... I remember this because I remember really wanting one. The base car had 320 horsepower.
Oh, it was heavy.
But they said that you could do... there's a tuned one with 385. But I seem to remember this. They'll do you one with 540-odd horsepower, but then someone would do 1,000 horsepower. Allegedly, but that one never appeared.
I wonder what its 0-60 time was. It wasn't 3.9 seconds.
4.9 for the R, 4.9, and 5.3 for the Regsy SV.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Wow. So, Zog, I think your estimate is correct.
I think it might be, you know.
I think it's, you know, in the big picture, it's a good thing that there's an MG badge on a two-seat roadster.
Yeah, again, maybe.
You know, I dare say this will be a relatively small part of the new MG's sales. I'm sure it's not going to be their biggest selling vehicle.
It's not the volume seller, I won't lie. I mean, the GT is five a shy of 60 grand, which is quite a lot of money, but at sort of Cayman Boxster territory, which is quite good. And it's a bit different, really. Like, as the roof goes up in like 12 seconds, which is no time at all, the interior design kind of looks good. And you've got, like, touch screens around you, and they operate everything via them. But the problem is, whenever you try and press a button on them or do a thing on them, it then tells you off for not looking at the road, but you're trying to change the stereo, you're trying to do something else. It's like, you're telling me off for looking at you. I just want to do the thing.
Can't have it both ways.
And you're then being further distracted by being told off, even if you were being distracted by doing the thing in the first place.
Yes, and none of it's haptic, so you don't know if you've hit your marks. You do actually have to look at it a bit like an iPhone, which is irritating.
Yeah.
But the GT was pleasingly quick. I can't off the top of my head remember sort of my miles per kilowatt hour. But, you know, they say it'll do 270-odd miles on a charge. That's broadly accurate. I took it out for a fair old spin. It came to me with something like 75-80% battery, and that lasted me more than enough to go out and tart around the countryside in it and then plug it into a fast charger before having to give it back. Efficiency wise it was really good. So it has various drive modes. There's comfort and eco and all that nonsense, trophy, or there's a list of them somewhere, hang on. Comfort, custom, sport and track. So sport obviously makes everything a bit jazzy and your efficiency notably drops. It says, well, you have fewer miles now. Comfort's kind of the default mode. And it's done a thing that I wanted EVs to do for ages, which is drop the eco mode. Because you get EVs that go, oh, well, you can have normal, you can have sport, or you can have eco. It's like, make the eco mode the normal mode, so you get the most out of it, and you don't feel guilty for being like, well, I have it in eco mode to keep the range up. And then sport mode, if you want to have it like that, you notice that you're losing range, but it doesn't matter. It also has a super sport button on the steering wheel, which turns everything up to a million, and the range drops even further. The dash turns red. It's quite an odd thing, but bugger me, it's quick. It's really
super smart, quick.
I have no reason to disbelieve that it will do 0-60 in 3.2 because it's really fast. If it wants to be, it's really, really fast.
And does it feel grippy and sorted like a right. Porsche or a Lotus?
Here's the rub. It's incredibly good at cruising. Like, really good. I had it up and down the motorway. I had it on country roads. I drove it through the middle of London, and it was smooth. It was as quiet as you can get a convertible to be, because obviously the ragtop's a ragtop. Sound's going to travel. And it did that very nicely. Like, I was happily cruising up the M11 at 70 miles an hour, able to listen to my podcast comfortably. When you start setting it up to do very fast things and do very silly things, it can hustle. Like, you can put it into a corner and it will grip and grip and grip and go. But the moment the road gets ever so slightly bumpy, because it weighs so much, because, you know, it's got a 77 kilowatt-hour battery in it. It weighs the same as the moon. It's over 2 tonnes, so that'll explain it. The moment the road gets a little bit bumpy, you feel the whole thing. You just feel it through the body, through your bum, through your gut. You kind of lose a bit of confidence in it because you wonder, what if this is upset? You know, because most people who have these, they're not going to hire a track and go for a wang around Castle Coombe. They're going to have a nice B-road blast, like, as you would in an MGB, as you would in another sports car, a Cayman or a Boxster.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's the cruiser, not the sports car. And it's an incredibly quick cruiser. Like, if you want to point it down a road and get to the other side very quickly, it will do that, like, punishingly so. But as something that's like, well, I really want to go out and drive this for the hell of it, and I'm going to go faster around that corner, like, slightly bumpy. There's a road I use in Cambridgeshire that I've put more than a few cars through its paces down there. Sports cars, boring saloons, boring estates, SUVs, hatchbacks, you name it. It's a good tell as to how composed a car is, because it's not very bumpy, but it's, you know, it's a country back road. There's not much on it. You can see for miles. You can see if anyone's coming. And it just upset it a little bit. Once the road got a little bit bumpy, the car itself wasn't very happy, which was annoying. But as an cruiser and as something to go around town in, to occasionally go watch this, it's absolutely mega. I do wonder whether, if it was my money, I'd need the GT's power, because I'd only used it sparingly. I'd probably prefer the extra range and sort of the rear driveness of the trophy, given my choice and my money.
The power is going to be governed by electronics and the size of the motors that they use.
Yeah.
It's only a range that's going to give you extra weight, isn't it? You can still have the same amount of power with half the size of battery.
Yeah.
I wonder if that is a possible idea, that they're never going to offer a car with a shorter range, are they? Kind of the Lotus Elise, if you like, of the EV commercial. They just won't. I know that they've got a coupe. It's called the GTS. They did a concept coupe based on the Cyberster. I think it's called the Cyberster GTS or something like that. And, oh, it looks about right, like an MGB GT. It really does look right.
And it does look mega.
Yeah, and that would be a nice cruiser. That would be a nice Euro cruiser, that would. Yeah. So maybe the second generation of the car, if that happens, is going to be...
Maybe they'll just bring it out. They'll say, well, sod it. A few people like the convertible, but it's, you know, when they brought out the F-Type, it was convertible first and then coupe. So you never know, this time next year, I would have had a spin in the Cyberster four-door, or the Cyber GTS, that's what it's called. So it's not the Cyberster, because it's not a roadster. It's a Cyber... Cyber...
Yeah.
Still don't love the name.
There must have been better names for it. It should have been called the MGE, really, shouldn't it?
They've got the MG4, they've got all the other cars are numbers, so it's the 4 and the 5 and the 3.
ZS.
There's the ZS. There was an MG years and years and years ago. It was supposed to be called the XS, smallish SUV, and I remember going on the launch of it. And it was
and Jaguar. You mentioned this on the last show, that Jaguar complained and they had to rename it.
Not JLR in general, because I think it was a name on the Defender.
Right.
You know, you notice, like, they had all this merch for it, and you opened the bag and it said XS on the inside and it'd been covered up on the outside.
I hope they spell XS, E-X-C-E-S-S. Is that how you spell it?
I mean, that would have gotten them out of some wrangles. But no, it was genuinely impressed. Like, I'm not the...
Yeah,
I wouldn't not go surprised. In going, oh, this is going to be rubbish because it's an MG, because I don't... you know, you judge a car on its merits. And some of MG's previous products, since it's been owned by SAIC, has been a bit cack. Let's be honest. The MG6 was not an outstanding vehicle. The ZS or whatever it was called, you know, I got out of it and immediately forgot absolutely everything about it. The MG3 was okay. It was quite fun in an odd sort of way. But, you know, again, other cars existed that were better.
The MG4 was the, MG4, the I drove... only electric estate. I mean, reasonably capable, but the dullest looking car. It looks like someone shrink-wrapped a Passat. Oh, sorry. Wrong name.
You're thinking of the 6?
What's the estate? The estate is the
5?
5.
Hang on, MG5? Quickly to the internet.
Yeah.
MG5. Yeah, so the MG4...
MG5, and the 5 is the estate.
Yeah, that's not a very inspiring motor car.
It was reasonably competent.
The MG4 is really, really good.
Exceptional.
Like, really good.
We've discussed this, but yeah, car of the year for me on this show. Was it last year, the year before? Absolutely blown away by it. It was such a joy. I kind of wish them well. I never used to, but I do now. And I'd love to drive that car. It's really...
I was really pleasantly surprised by it. The weight still hampers it. What I did find, though, when I was doing a charge, there was a bloke sort of randomly walking around. It was on a BP petrol station forecourt and they had some fast chargers. So I was eating a sandwich and making a phone call and generally being bored for a bit. And he came up and said, "Oh, I've not seen anything like this before." I said, "Oh, no, it's new. It's the MG Cyberstream." Gave him the whole spiel and he went, "Yeah, but you still have to stop and recharge it, don't you?" And I went, "Yes, clearly." "Oh, and it's too heavy." And I went, "Well, yeah, it is a bit, but it's a 2-seat sports car. Like, at the moment, if you want a 2-seat sports car EV..."
This is your only option.
"This. Or hope. Next year there'll be a Porsche Boxster, sure."
Yeah.
And he kind of gave me the whole, "I don't like EVs, so this is bad thing." And I was like, "Why are you talking to me about it? Like, it's a really decent thing. If I had a plug in 60 grand and that was still my only option, I would not be unhappy wagging around in one of those on the day-to-day."
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear that. I think it looks good. I think it looks better than good. I think it looks bang on. I think the trim, from what I can tell, the interior fitments and fittings are nicely executed, really.
No squeaks, no rattles. The only thing that did kind of, not irk, but because it's a fabric roof, whenever you went over something particularly jaggedy, you could hear it moving.
Maybe that's because the rest of the car was so quiet.
Yeah, but no, it was a good, like, I got out of it at the end of my few days with it and went, "No, that was a good car. That was a good car." I'm glad I didn't go in being prejudgy and grumpy about it, because it was genuinely good. Very pleasantly surprised.
So, how do you feel about MG and electric convertibles?
Well, I think the big takeaway from the Cyberster is that, I mean, honestly, shallow as I am, this has significantly boosted my opinion of the new MG. I'm really glad that they are making a little 2-seat roadster. I think it looks great. Yeah, it's a shame that by the sound of it isn't a little bit more nimble.
Yeah, I mean, also, it's not that little. It's 4.5 metres long.
It's over 2 tonnes.
It's 4.5 metres long.
Yeah.
The wheelbase is fairly chunky.
It's probably longer than an XJF, isn't it? What do we call it? The F-Type.
Is it?
It is. F-Type was very short.
It was deceptive, that car. Let me have a quick look. Because the F-Type was also the widest thing in the world.
4.47 metres long.
4.47 to 4.5. So it's 20 centimetres longer, which is, you know... Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be upset with 20 extra centimetres. Here's a knob gag. But the F-Type's also the widest car in the world.
It was broad, wasn't it? That big transmission that you've got to sit in between is
I love that. I put one on a ferry once and then I couldn't get out of it without basically crawling out of the most narrow door aperture imaginable, because they put me up against a wall. And then all these, there's a busload of school kids were like, "Oh, look at the man in the red sports car, isn't he? Look at that." And then I crawled out of it. And all of a sudden, the magic was somewhat lost.
But that's one of the reasons why convertibles are so great. Because if you've got trouble with your doors, you just go out through the roof.
Yeah,
come on.
True.
Cyberster's got scissors doors, as you mentioned.
It has indeed.
That just do a lovely bit of ballet. I mean, that's what you're paying for, maybe. And it's fair enough, yeah. Hey, there is, I believe, one other electric convertible. It's not available yet. What's it called? The Gran Cabrio? The Maserati Gran Cabrio Electric?
Yeah, the Maserati thing. Hang on.
I don't know if it actually exists. It was threatened for this year, but has been delayed, I think, till next year.
So it's the Folgore.
Gran Cabrio Folgore, that's it. Yeah,
it's coming.
I think it's not on sale. We can't really count it, can we?
Fair enough, yeah.
So, yeah, for the moment, the Cyberster has the... has the market to itself, but you know, I'm a fan. I hope they, you know, maybe go a little bit lighter with future generations of roadsters.
If
new MG is going to carry on making those kind of cars, but that isn't really the world we live in these days. That we're not really likely to see that, are we?
I was talking to someone who makes EVs out of older cars, and he was saying that our customers at the moment, the customers want the power, but they also want the range that this can give them. But further down the line, and they made a very big point of saying this. We can slot these cells out. And what he said is the next gen is basically the same range for half the weight and half the space.
Yeah.
So either a customer can have a bit less weight or they can have the same weight and twice the range.
Yeah, and that is what sports cars are all about. You don't buy a sports car to do 300 miles at 60 miles per hour. You drive a sports car to do 80 miles at 90 miles per hour.
Yes, and, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then you stop and have a nice cup of tea and go, that was wonderful.
That's
so if there was any sort of car which would benefit from battery density improvement, it's the sports car. I've said it about Lotus, I've said it about MG now as well, and all cars will benefit, but the sports car could arguably benefit the most.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
And should we leave it on that very philosophical thought today, boys?
Most philosophical.
Slightly grown up for once, not like
very
me.
Good.
Hey boys, lovely to see you. Izogi, farewell.
Good to see you both. See you soon.
Alex, farewell.
Bye.
Stay in touch, see you for more on Speed in two of your Earth Electric Weeks.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.